Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
The NFL has appointed another independent person, overseer, arbiter, to hear the appeal of the NFL regarding the Deshaun Watson suspension. Currently it's 6 games. It will be more. And then we find out if the NFLPA or Watson's camp comes back with a lawsuit trying to seek an injunction with all of this. The saga's just beginning. Third hour, though, is here. Show flying by. OutKick 360 across the OutKick Network, 6th and Peabody, our location, with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. We have Armando Salguero joining us in 20 minutes. Couple of NFL headlines out there today from training camps. Matthew Stafford is dealing with, he termed, bad tendonitis. That was the quote in his elbow. So maybe we don't see Matthew Stafford very much until the Thursday night game to kick off the regular season. When I say we don't see
You're
him
talking
much,
practice.
I'm talking practice,
because
yeah.
We know we're not seeing him in games,
right?
Because the Rams are the leaders in dismissing preseason games,
yes,
as a factor. McVay did that 2 years ago now, where he basically just said, we don't play people in the preseason.
You guys both channeled a little bit of Allen Iverson there when you said, we're talking practice.
We're talking practice.
Now. We're talking about practice?
That's a concern for Stafford. I mean, you want your guy feeling okay, and he's not participating in team drills. I can't imagine he's throwing much, with much mustard or much distance in individual either.
You know, not the same thing, but Roethlisberger was dealing with the shoulder, and then he had an elbow issue too, and he was not throwing much in the offseason last year. And he said, like, you know, typical offseason, he was throwing like 50,000 passes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm ad-libbing here on what he was saying in generalities.
A lot.
Like more than you would guess at some random trivia night if he threw it out. So for him not to throw, I wouldn't imagine if he's dealing with that, he's throwing anyway leading up to this, but who knows? But yeah, that's a storyline to watch simply because of what they're trying to accomplish and who they brought back. You know, McVay said one of the main reasons he decided to come back and not even pursue a meeting with the $20 million per year offer for media was because Stafford and Cooper Kupp came to his office and said, there's no way you're leaving. Like, we're on a roll here. We just won one. We have a chance to put together something special. And you've got the other guys on that roster, Aaron Donald included, who said he said his retirement plans are now based on if Sean McVay's the head coach or not.
Yeah. So if McVay took a TV deal, things would have come apart there personnel-wise, at least from Aaron Donald.
And I'm tying it back into Stafford, because Stafford is, you know, he's a part of this whole thing with what the Rams have done. And I thought of this. Someone asked me the other day about why Brady didn't get penalized for the tampering with Miami. And I immediately thought, like, we literally just saw this. The Super Bowl champions did it with the head coach and with their quarterback vacationing in Cabo.
Rule isn't against that.
Yeah,
the rule is the other way. Now, Florio wrote and proposed, you know, there should be a rule on the Sean Payton side. If you're approached, you should have to go to the league office and say right away, I was approached, it's illegal, I backed off, and I'm coming to report it to you. You know, if you're a coach, because you're in team management, it should apply to you, and you should have to turn in the approachee. But a player, how can you pin it on a player?
And just to clarify the rule, so even if Brady and his management team approach the Dolphins, based on that contact, the Dolphins have to turn that in and report it if the player did that.
Right. As if it's on the Dolphins.
By not doing it and by engaging in that conversation, it was tampering. That's why the rule is
the onus is
Miami.
On the club
always.
To turn it in at all times,
which is fine. It's reasonable.
Well,
I mean, it's a standard rule.
In Sean Payton's case, the Dolphins would have to trade for his rights,
but
right? In order also, to have the conversation. I mean, you back channel it in a proper way. There are proper ways to do it.
Should not just be willy-nilly, though, that there's no repercussions if you're under contract for another team. You just go and contact whoever.
Well, for the coach, I certainly think it's a different level. For a player, the rule is you can't mess with players. So if somebody's messing with the player, that's on the person, the team messing with them, not on the player being messed with.
You know, if we're gonna put a clause in a quarterback's,
or put it on agents.
If we're gonna put a clause in a quarterback's contract to study independently for 4 hours, I think that you should put in the contract you can't be going to other teams approaching them about doing something with them. I don't think that's unreasonable for a contract
The team, the onus is on the team to run away from that contact.
By the way, the league did not say Brady did this first. He didn't say they contacted.
Well, I get what you're saying, Paul, but if it's the onus on them to report it, in reporting it, that player should face some sort of consequence also for doing that. If I go to the owner of another team and say, I'm unhappy in Tampa or wherever, let's talk. Let's get engaged in something. I can be a part owner there, whatever, but we're going to make this happen. If the owner just said, stop right there, this is illegal, goes to the league and turns in that player, nothing happens to the player?
No.
That's ridiculous.
I don't imagine many players are instigating this.
I don't either,
team instigated.
I feel like that should be something that's included in an NFL contract that you don't do that. Maybe I'm crazy, but I guess players could just do whatever the hell they want.
Well, the players, in this case, and again, it's a hypothetical. In this case, both instances took place in December in a contract expiring year for Tom Brady. And this past year as well, whenever he was going to retire.
I think the league thinks it's covered by having an absolute huge rule against it from the team side. So it's in its thinking, if Tom Brady hypothetically were to approach Miami, it says, well, we're covered because Miami can't participate in that.
We hitting around the main issues here, but the issue is Matthew Stafford took LA from a team that was on the cusp to a team that was great. And something small now, hope for their sake, they're hoping it doesn't pop up in October and lead to something a bit more down the road, something to follow.
But you'd much rather it be a ankle tweak or a hamstring than an elbow.
I would. I would think so. And a contract extension at wide receiver.
Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, and he gets
Pittsburgh.
2 years.
He did quite well. $36 million, two-year extension, which I think is now a total of 3 years.
So is this the new norm, guys?
Short deals.
Not just short deals, but if you're in year three and you want to get paid, you just demand it. And if you don't get the full term extension, teams are going to give you a raise.
2 days ago, the report was they are nowhere close. Nowhere close. I think the agent said it maybe publicly.
And Johnson, what's going into his final year.
Yeah, and is the answer to look at the rules for rookies and change that to shorten it? Because now it doesn't matter.
Well, the players really wanted that.
If you play well, you just demand that you want it a year early, and you're going to get it.
The players really wanted free agency after 3 years.
Yes.
At least at wide receiver, it feels like free agency after 3 years.
They're creating, in a way.
At one position.
And I guess what I'm saying is, shouldn't the league be more agreeable to that if the owners in the league and the GMs are just going to give them the big money 3 years in either way?
Well, we're talking about 11, 12 guys in one offseason at one position. That's a long way from the whole league. It's a nice trend.
It's a nice trend
for players at one premium position for sure.
Who didn't get paid? Like
that wide receiver, everybody got paid.
I mean,
paid.
AJ got his. The Titans decided not to pay him, but he got paid. So if you want it, you just demand it, and you hold firm, and you'll get it. Like Deontay Johnson wasn't playing ball with Pittsburgh here. You know, he was...
And he's a great player.
What about different rules for different positions taken in the draft? Make it a year shorter for positions that you said the super important positions.
Well, I think
it's 4 years for an offensive guard and 3 years for a receiver.
It's too soon to judge that, though, because
so it's 1 year for quarterback?
Yeah,
like we've talked about.
I mean, have a sliding scale.
It's too soon to decide what's happening at wide receiver because it could be that primo, or it could be the next running back based on how these. If Treylon Burks comes in and replaces AJ Brown real effectively, the Titans could say,
"Well, the next CBA
hey,
could address
that
for
us."
The next CBA could change that, and I would say 3 years for quarterback, 3 years for receiver. I don't know another position right now that I'd put on that list that wouldn't be 4 years.
Well, I think the left tackles and the corners would come in and say, well, you know, we're equal value. We just don't have the stats to go with it.
It's great news for the players when you can find a way to legitimately circumvent the rules of the league and get what you want early. And they've done that at that position. Yep. Fair to say?
Right now.
Guys that are good. They're getting what they want.
Very good.
AJ Brown's tweeting about, hey, I was the one guy who was traded that asked for this. Everyone else got exactly what they wanted. Well, he got exactly what he wanted money-wise, contract-wise, just with another team.
And Deontay Johnson, yet another example of a guy doing it on a cheap quarterback team, an inexpensive quarterback team. I'm not calling them cheap. They drafted a first-rounder, but they're not spending money at quarterback right now.
Here's who's coming up, guys. So
yeah, this
we had how many? 11 now?
Wide 11 of the top paid 16 or 17 now.
So here are wide receivers that are about to begin year three. So about to finish or going
year,
into the offseason.
A year in April, we'll be talking about it.
Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Ayuk, Michael Pittman, T. Higgins, Van Jefferson, Chase Claypool, LaVisca Chenault. And that's just like through about 40 selections of the 2020 NFL draft.
Well, I would say some of those guys need to put up this year to get there, but they're tracking well. But that's not as good as this year's list was a year ago.
I guess. I mean, that's...
Well, it's not as many for starters because we just said 11.
Again, I did that in about 30 seconds, yeah. Glancing down through a list. There are others. Henry Ruggs would have been on that list.
Yeah.
There are several others from the list. Point being, like, the trend is teams are willing to pay for wide receivers. It may not be the team those guys are on, but you can get moved and get your money. And it's a trend that's worth following because there are always going to be stars at that position based on how the rules are made for the league right now.
Also, a very big deal, you know, how does Garrett do? How does Jamison Williams do? How does Treylon Burks do? How do these first-round wide receivers do?
Yeah.
Because if three out of four wide receivers, you know, if you're hitting at 75, 70% now, it hurts those guys because teams – more teams can say it's becoming a more replaceable commodity. Where's the shift? Right now it feels like it's 50-50, especially depending on your expense at quarterback. But if you're seeing teams who let guys walk or traded them, a Tyreek Hill, a Davante Adams, an A.J. Brown, and replace them successfully, then you might be on the fence. You might be having meetings saying, well, this guy's been terrific for us, but if we draft a replacement and go cheap again – we can spend those resources on left tackle, cornerback, quarterback, positions we know we have to spend and aren't so easily replaceable. I think it's one of the more fascinating stories in the league right now.
Matt Ryan and the Colts begin our look at the AFC South. New acquisition, veteran quarterback. They luck out because they get rid of Carson Wentz and they upgrade with Matt Ryan. They also add Alec Pierce, a rookie in this draft, to pair him with Pittman at wide receiver. They add Stephon Gilmore at corner. They add Yannick Ngakoue on their defense. They've also bolstered the interior of their defensive line. And they lose Glowinski on the offensive line, but is that addition by subtraction? Yeah, as well. So here's a team that all they had to do was go to Jacksonville and win in the final week of the season and couldn't do it. And they now turn and still see Jonathan Taylor in their backfield, still see Pittman, one of the playmakers at wide receiver, and now they have Matt Ryan. And the question is, does this take them from a team that couldn't go on the road and win in the pressure moment against one of the worst in the league, a team that had the number one pick in back-to-back years, they couldn't beat them in the final game of the regular season, to now a team that is a legitimate AFC South top of the crop? Just by that one addition.
I like what they did in the defensive backfield, Hutt. Two guys we didn't mention there, Rodney McLeod, who was a guest of ours at the Super Bowl, I think is a good addition. Nick Cross, third-round draft pick at safety. That's in addition to Gilmore. Kenny Moore, who's an excellent corner/nickel. I like Grover Stewart with DeForest Buckner with Ngakoue, Okereke. I like some of the things they have on defense. I don't think they did nearly enough at receiver. I mean, I look at the Titans who didn't do enough at receiver, and they did even less. Paris Campbell, you're waiting and waiting and waiting on that guy. He's nothing. Alec Pierce I liked in the draft, but it's going to take time. Pittman is good but limited.
Yeah,
I don't like him at receiver. I don't think that Matt Ryan has enough weapons, and I think their offensive line is overrated. Quentin Nelson's very good. Ryan Kelly's very good. Braden Smith's probably very good. But these other two, Danny Pinter and Matt Pryor as the left tackle, everybody seems to just be glossing over like he's going to be good. He's an average guy with a non-mobile quarterback who's going to have to throw the ball away and take some sacks.
It's crazy to think this is a franchise that has not won the AFC South since 2014, that it's been that long of a drought for them. When you think about the Colts, that seemingly are always in the mix every year of a team you're talking about to make the playoffs or go on a run. I think it's a playoff team. I mean, they are a choke job away a year ago in Jacksonville from making the playoffs. I see the overall roster. It's improved with the additions we showed, especially Stephon Gilmore, Ngakoue. I mean, this is a better team than a year ago. Addition by subtraction, Carson Wentz gone, Matt Ryan in. I think that's an upgrade. Not an enormous upgrade. Certainly an upgrade in the competitive character department the care department. Locker room presence department, you're going to get that with Matt Ryan. I think it's a playoff team that's going to be right there with the Titans to win that division in December. I think it's that simple with the Colts.
I don't see the big lead the Titans had and the early clinch scenarios that the Titans
are
had.
Not going to sweep this Colts team or like they did last year.
Or run
Colts
away
team.
With it.
Well, what buried the Colts last year were they finished the way they started. They started 0-3. Including a loss here in Nashville. They sent them to 0-3. And then they finished limping by losing to the Raiders and the Jags in back-to-back weeks.
Raiders was forgivable. The Jags was not.
Yeah. But again, pressure moments where you just got to keep. The 0-3 start made those December games
crucial.
Massive. And all of them are, but just they could not let a game slip based on the wild card race. Houston, on the other hand, not in the wild card race last year. Quarterback is a guy they believe in Davis Mills. We had their former head coach in studio with us earlier this offseason. Their current head coach, Lovie Smith, feels the same way. And the additions have been on the offensive line and at corner. At corner, Derek Stingley, by all accounts, and just reading on the Texans over the last couple of days, he is putting on a show. I don't know if that's because of terrible quarterback play, or because he is in there as a bona fide all-pro candidate as a rookie. Like some guys just come in and just they fit. He looks like a veteran corner in practice when you watch highlights, which is tough to do in one-on-one drills. This guy's getting picks in one-on-one drills. I haven't heard as much on Kenyon Green, the rookie guard, who was drafted a bit higher than many thought he would go in the first round. Many thought he'd be at the back end of the first round. The Texans selected him to help solidify their front at 15 overall, and they also have Steven Nelson at corner. They lose David Culley. They lost safety Justin Reed, and they replace Culley with Lovie Smith, and to me, it's
a wash.
The same team.
Yeah.
Let me ask
the
you
coach,
this.
The coaching department, to me, is a wash from last year to this year.
And if you're going to pick an environment and a franchise – where a second-year, third-round quarterback pick is going to take off and surprise the league. Is it the Houston Texans? No, that'd be one of the last five teams, you would say, where that would happen. So I understand they're hopeful about the guy. I understand he's got some characteristics and stuff. But are we going to be sitting in December saying, wow, that Davis Mills really surprised us all in Houston? No. In New England? Maybe.
I'd be a lot more optimistic about Davis Mills in year two if John Metchie wasn't diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, that is a huge blow to that team. That was a great pickup where they traded up to get him in the second round. Coming off the knee injury late in the season at Alabama, but a terrific talent and a terrific career at Alabama. That's a big blow. And first off, obviously, thoughts with him in battling cancer. But for the Texans' fortunes, that's bad. I think that the roster, it was going to be improved regardless from last year to this year. It is slightly improved, but this is still – this is a team that's going to duke it out with the Jag. Just like the Colts are going to duke it out with the Titans at the top, these two are going to have a pillow fight at the bottom of the division to see who's going to finish last.
They open up this year against Indy. They're hosting Indy in week one.
Rematch.
And, yeah, they get to go at it down in Houston when everyone's healthy. They don't have the saga of Watson hanging over them. I should also point out with additions and subtractions, I would also count Zach Cunningham as a loss.
Yes.
They let him go for nothing to a division rival, and he was a wrecking ball in the middle of their defense, and he was a big part of why they were so good at stopping the run.
They've shown us little reason to believe in the people who are constructing the roster and the people who are leading the coaching of the roster. Until they prove otherwise, I think we all feel that way.
I believe the Texans, I know the Texans are among the teams. I believe they're the only team that currently, if you wanted to go bet game by game in Vegas, they're the only team not favored in a single matchup on the Vegas board.
They're drafting top three.
Jacksonville favored in both games, which means they're favored in two. They're drafting top three. And they have the picks of Cleveland as well on top of
nice,
that.
Nice, hearty draft next year. Are the right people making the picks?
Armando Salguero is our pick for NFL coverage at Outkick.com. He joins us next as we go on the field with Outkick 360. The NFL's Hall of Fame game is tonight on NBC in primetime. The Jacksonville Jaguars and the Las Vegas Raiders. Boselli and Branch are two of the members that will be inducted as Pro Football Hall of Famers this weekend in Canton. That's the tie-in between the two teams, and the Jags are finally represented there. Armando Salguero and PK represent the Hall of Fame as well as selectors, and Armando joins us from Outkick.com, covers the league for the site, and very appreciative, Armando, for sliding back on the time for us today. We appreciate you, man, and ready to talk some ball and watch some football tonight.
No, I understand my lot in life and my place on the totem pole. I get it.
Well, if you get a legitimate
guess, Mondo goes off into the netherworld.
To clarify, Armando, if you were here in town and walked in, you would have bumped Scott Dixon, who was on Zoom in another place also. So you get absolutely every privilege that Scott Dixon would have. He just happened to be in town and walked into our studio an hour early. So we appreciate your flexibility with that. Thank you.
Well, I'm just hoping to avoid the unfortunate possibility that we're going to carry over from the last segment and talk about the Texans.
We are not. No. I want to talk about your piece up at Outkick right now where you've looked in to the history of Peter Harvey, who's now the new appointee of the NFL. What can you tell us about some of his decisions and legal work in the past?
Well, he was the first black attorney general for the state of New Jersey. He popped a mob boss. He went after the Latin Kings gang. I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Latin Kings, right?
Yes.
they're not a band. and so
celebrate their entire catalog. Yes.
Yes. And he also did, some liberal things. He wrote he helped write New Jersey's anti-gun law. So, he did that. But aside from the fact that he has worked for the NFL and has been party to NFL, paychecks, I think that Deshaun Watson, at the very least, can feel pretty good about the fact that this guy doesn't come in with, having picked a side consistently throughout his legal career.
What happens if I know I'm hypothetical here, okay? I think we know how this is going to end. They're going to lay down the hammer on Deshaun Watson. What happens if the NFL doesn't get what it wants for a second time?
Well, then Roger Goodell takes his L and goes into the regular season telling us how great the regular season is going to be. Look, I don't think that Goodell is all that concerned about what the outcome of the appeal is. Okay. I think that he was concerned about what people thought of how hard the NFL fought in trying to get the year-long suspension for Deshaun Watson. If you fight hard, if you go to the mat, if you take it to the appeals process, Roger Goodell can really say, hey, you know what? I did all that I could, and this was the result, and we have to accept it.
For the worst tampering case that commissioner's ever seen, does that seem like the worst penalty he could have come up with for Stephen Ross and the Dolphins?
I wrote on Outkick, Paul, the site that you also write for sometimes, yeah. And Jonathan and Chad, that they got off light. I thought that the Dolphins got off light, and I'm a little perturbed that nothing happens to Tom Brady. Nothing happens to Sean Payton. They're like, you know, treated like victims when in fact they were active participants in the tampering, and Brady, an active participant over a 3-year span. So how is it that they just, you know, don't even get mentioned, and yet this was not your typical tampering in that, you know, game is played, game is over, both teams meet in the middle of the field, and maybe a coach tells a player, hey, dude, I know you're a free agent, come to us next year. Or a player tells a coach, hey, I'm not under contract next year, come get me. This wasn't that. This was a pattern of behavior by the Miami Dolphins in that they know the tampering rules and just, you know, didn't care. And didn't care to the heights of ownership. It's one thing if the coach is in it or an assistant or some, the owner, and then the owner who's in line to be the next owner were the two chief guys involved.
And there's layered interest in this whole story to me, Armando, with all of this and what came out of this investigation. It states in the investigation, it was proven that the Dolphins did not tank games in that season. Stephen Ross then goes and puts out a statement that's a victory lap about how egregious it was that, you know, it was claimed that he said all these things. But then in the report, it basically says he did say these things about tanking. And he did make a reference, even if he said the intent was a joke, about paying $100,000 to Brian Flores to lose games over the course of the season. So then I come down on this, man, Brian Flores may have a little bit here in this lawsuit, not about the racist elements of it, but now we're going to sit there and try to deliberate what was taken as a joke and what wasn't, and what was the intent of what Stephen Ross was saying. What did you make of that part of this report?
At the core, the things that Brian Flores alleges about the Miami Dolphins in his lawsuit are true. And Stephen Ross said, relative to tanking, that winning wasn't the most important thing for him. That the priority for him during the 2019 season was situating the team as best as possible for the 2020 draft. That's in the report. And so that is a mindset from the very top of the organization. And it wasn't just the very top of the organization. Ross repeated these things to the president of the team, the general manager of the team, the senior vice president in charge of the salary cap, and Coach Flores, until the point where Flores got, you know, angry about it and was told, you know, Steve is on your side. Don't you worry about nothing. He's for you and with you. He loves you. He wants to win. And then Ross stopped telling those things to Flores.
Amazing, isn't it, that this all started with Bill Belichick sending a text to Brian Flores instead of Brian Daboll and congratulating him on that job. If not for that text, who knows if we end up here with where everything is. And Brady was involved in this in some capacity, the whole thing. Armando, if you think Tom Brady should be penalized, should Matthew Stafford also be penalized for vacationing with in Cabo with Rams head coach Sean McVay?
Did they do that for 3 years in a row?
Well, they did it once, and then he won a Super Bowl for the team.
Yeah, that's where I think that look, the NFL is huge, and their arm of discipline is huge on past behavior, and I think we can all agree, Tom Brady, you know, God bless him, a lot of championship rings. But not a pristine reputation, no?
Sure.
Are we agreed on that? Right?
He really wants to be in Miami, too.
Right. So, Sean Payton, great coach, but also not a pristine reputation, right? I mean, the bounty scandal, so forth. He was suspended. So, these guys have a history with NFL discipline. And yet they get off scot-free. And I know what you're saying, Jonathan, about Stafford. I don't know of any Stafford disciplinary issue prior to, you know, him going to Cabo and Sean McVay is there. And
well, Sean McVay is not the owner, too. Of course. I would say is a big difference. Sean McVay didn't own the Rams.
He met in Cabo. It's, I mean, we all know the story. They're going to write a children's book about it at the league office about how he went and hit it off with the head coach and offensive coordinator, and then a few months later won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and it because it worked out.
But Stafford approved the trade because he met with Sean McVay. And to think that he's the only person Stafford met with, we're not fools.
What I don't understand, Armando, is that the players have a contract, right? I mean, we have been talking and debating about Kyler Murray signing a contract where he has independent study clauses for 4 hours a week in it. I feel like an NFL contract with a player, especially a very high-paid quarterback, would stipulate that you are in violation of your contract if you go and meet and talk to other teams' owners about playing for their team while under contract. That's the confusing part to me. Not necessarily the league discipline element, but I feel like they would be in violation of a contract if they did that.
Sure. But, Chad, I mean, contracts in the NFL, they are a sometimes ambiguous.
True.
Amoeba-ish, breakable, adjustable, extensionable, cuttable, releasable thing. Teams take advantage of it. I mean, we've got a bunch of wide receivers in the NFL right now who were under contract for this year at X dollars, and they made it known that they were so upset and unhappy, and a couple of them asked to be traded to the point where the contract that they were under this year got rewritten either by the team that they were playing with or a team that they were traded to. Those contracts were hard and fast, and yet the players found a way to get them changed.
It's a month and 4 days until the Rams open, but bad elbow tendonitis for Matthew Stafford, even that far away, has to have the Rams a little bit nervous, doesn't it? I'd rather be talking about an ankle or a hamstring or a knee than throw an elbow.
Is this the pound Matthew Stafford segment?
No, he's just the most recent example that no one mentions. I mean, we praise the Rams for doing this, but I mean, to me, it happens every offseason.
As long as you're going to talk about Matthew Stafford's shortcomings, what about that moment at the parade where a photographer falls off a stage
and he turns around?
Like, hey,
back to where's my beer?
He walks away.
At least his wife took care of
him. His wife stopped to take care of him. He kept going.
This is terrible.
They issued a statement pretty quickly.
And he had to end up paying for the photographer's medical bill so that he wouldn't be, uncovered as unfeeling and, you know, just generally a bad human.
Armando, what do you think we see next? You mentioned the wide receiver contracts. Everybody that asked to get paid got paid in some way. Some got a 2-year extension. It's a money today for Johnson. Others, A.J. Brown had a 5-year contract. It's probably a 3-year deal looking at the money and the guarantees. Nonetheless, do you think it's more likely we look back on this 2 years from now and say the teams that extended these guys this offseason extended them during their prime window, and we'll see them move on to the next crop of wide receivers after this, and the short-term contract with the money now, actually, they're paying for the production that the guys are about to produce now. Do you think long-term we'll look back on this and think, man, that it really wasn't that much money for the wide receiver production they received for the top guys?
Right. I would say that will probably be true for most of these guys, with the possible and probable exception of DK Metcalf, who, you know, has a quarterback situation.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, really bad. So if I'm the Seattle Seahawks and I'm fake GM Mondo, yeah, I'm trading DK Metcalf for draft choice compensation, because they're not winning the NFC West. They're not going to the playoffs, and they need a quarterback. And so what? What are you going to do with a $25 million wide receiver?
Armando, it's one thing for an offensive lineman to come into the league as a first-round pick with a chip on their shoulder, because that's how they play the game, to the whistle and beyond, and they're from a small school in northern Iowa. It's a different thing to pick a fight 3 straight practices and get booted from practice at the start of one on day number 3 because you fought someone all 3 days. But here's Trevor Penning, the rookie first rounder for the Saints, getting booted by their new head coach quickly in practice because he can't stop fighting during training camp. You can shape this however you want. This is not a good start for a professional.
I love him.
I mean, I kind of do him too, but I don't know how you could view it as, man, this guy.
I love him.
We crushed Taylor Lewan in this city for a while for having a lot of 15-yard penalties. I think this guy may set a record before it's all said and done if he continues at this rate.
That's fair, and the difference is Taylor Lewan is like in what, year 7, 6, something like that, Paul? What year is he in? Okay. This guy is in minute 15, and so he has a chance to learn. He's trying to make a name for himself, as one of the teammates who fought him said yesterday. And the guys in the locker room generally love him, think he's going to be really good. The coaching staff is angry because now under the CBA, you only get a limited amount of practice time. You can't keep a team out there 3 hours anymore. You can't keep them past, 2 hours anymore. And so they're upset when they have to stop practice and separate guys. But I guarantee you that sometime in the 2022 season, Trevor Penning will, the light bulb will come on and he will be playing. And he's going to be good.
Lewan going into year 9.
There it is. Year 9. Hey, Armando, final 30 seconds. Other than Trayvon Walker, and the answer can be no one, but I'm sure there is someone. Other than Trayvon Walker, is there a player tonight you're really eager to watch play?
No one. Okay. That's my answer. I'm sticking with it. No, actually, this is going to sound stupid. I want to see these two coaches coach. I want to see them handle the sideline and handle their teams. Josh McDaniels, the last time he was a head coach in the NFL, he was a disaster. And Doug Peterson, it's been a minute since you won the Super Bowl, my brother.
That's a great answer.
That is a good
That's
answer.
Not a stupid answer, Armando. That's why we have you on. No stupid answers on this show.
That's right.
Or from Armando. Appreciate you, man. And again, very gracious with your time this afternoon. We thank you very much.
Thank you for not asking me Texans questions, guys.
You're welcome. We'll get you next week.
Next week. Armando Salguero there with the latest from NFL training camp and courtrooms.
Yes. Our legal correspondent. Court
Tonight,
TV.
At least we don't get to see the NFL logo inside of a courtroom or outside of a legal proceeding. We get to see it on the actual field in camp.
I bet the entire second half will be spent talking about all the legal issues.
You'll have to let me know about that.
Yeah. Well, true.
The legal roundup on NBC.
Hey, we took a nice picture with Scott Dixon here after the segment. So I blew up me and Scott Dixon. I'm sending it to my mom. How is my neck here? Because I think my neck looks pretty good.
I don't care,
and I don't think you should care. I don't think you should care at all.
Obviously, Chad,
you care way too much.
Send it, and this is my example.
I think I look pretty good there.
You look great. But here's the example of the NFL appealing, putting this in front of an independent, now overseer, to decide the appeal. And they think it's going to come back a certain way based on what they're presenting. I think this could be an example of you're presenting this photo wanting to be praised. And it comes back the opposite way.
What could she say?
For a second time.
What could she say?
She's going to say, you're not eating.
I don't like that shirt.
You need to eat more. You look too thin.
Yeah. You're gaunt.
You look like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia is what she may come back and say.
Yeah, she didn't have that.
Castaway.
She didn't have Castaway the film recall. Example. She didn't have that film recall.
The end of Castaway. You should look more like Tom Hanks, the start of Castaway, and not Tom Hanks, the end of Castaway.
My mom is watching movies on what's the Hallmark
Betamax?
Channel. Give me a Hallmark movie reference.
Something Go ahead, Christmas Jess. In Vermont.
Go ahead, Jess.
Home for
Something
Christmas
with Golden
in New
Retrievers
England.
And Bows.
Yes.
The Hallmark
you got
Channel.
It.
Home for the holidays.
Oftentimes when I call, I tell her I'm going to call, she's going to wait until 8 until my movie is over.
Your story.
Hit us up on Twitter at Outkick360. More with the show next and on the Outkick Network. Hall of Fame game tonight. Paul, we need to put this on the calendar for next year. This was this is the anniversary of the All Rise to the Cleveland Indians trip where we went up for Canton, 3 years ago?
I had a close-up picture of Justin Timberlake in my Facebook memories last night from our Jerry Jones.
It wasn't that long ago. 5 years ago? 6 years ago.
It's both a memorable and forgettable trip. For you. how I would describe it. Both memorable and forgettable.
Aye,
like many
awesome.
Trips.
Yeah. But let's do it again.
We all rose.
It was a real breath of fresh air, that trip. I really feel like it was quite productive.
Cleveland treated us right.
Cleveland was great. I remember driving around through the area that you lived in, and you really came alive. I mean, the windows were down.
City embraced me.
Cleveland, welcome me with open arms. I'm here. I've arrived.
And we went back.
Your king is here.
We went by Paul's old church, and it was locked. We couldn't get in.
Yeah.
Boarded up.
I wouldn't say boarded up. Just it wasn't like there was a service going on at that time.
These men cannot enter.
Yes. Not worthy.
Speaking of the Yankees, they were in town against Cleveland that year. They lost last night. Castillo, the big pitcher that Seattle traded for, shut them down.
Wow. Not good. And Garrett Cole got lit up. Six runs in the first inning. He needs
14-15 for the Yankees since July 1st.
Well, they're not playing great right now.
For a team that's still got a great record. You know, they're fine.
They're pretty good.
But
they're just fine.
Yeah. Astros coming hard at them. The Yanks need home field for the playoffs.
It's going to be a fun show tomorrow. We will be live outside at 6th and Peabody for the 6th and P Grand Prix to get you ready for the Music City Grand Prix in Nashville. Hope you'll join us. Tons of NFL discussion. NFL Network's in town tomorrow. It's a big day.
Yeah.
Join us for Outkick 360.
Read right here. Don't block the box, but lock your locks.